Welcome to Closeted History, the podcast where we out the queer and trans history that you never knew. My name is Destiny. I use she, they pronouns. And today I'm joined by my good friend Thomas, better known as the leftist Squidward. And we are going to be talking about 2014's The Imitation Game, the movie starring, what's his name?
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Starring Benedict Cumberbatch, Keira Knightley, and Matthew Good. We definitely have some thoughts, so excited to talk about the movie with you. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. I love the fact that you used the leftist Squidward. It feels like a title now. But yeah, my TikTok name is leftist Squidward. I use they, he pronouns. And I primarily do content about Latin American things and leftist things. But I also, on the side, make music, write short stories. It's sort of a whole mess of things. But primarily, I really love looking into, Latin American cultures, whether it's politically or through their arts, and understanding kind of what happened there historically, and also like its significance politically and culturally.
Perfect. All right. Well, I am so excited to talk about it with you. As I mentioned, we are going to talk about The Imitation Game, which, if you have never seen it, it's a biopic about Alan Turing during World War II, that he tries to crack the German Enigma code with the help of a couple of mathematicians. And he is later on persecuted due to some things in his personal life, quote unquote. And so I will just go ahead and put it out that from this point on, there are probably going to be spoilers. That's what the movie's about. So if you don't care moving forward, great. If you haven't seen it, it came out in 2014. Come on now. Just kidding. I literally just saw it for the first time, so no worries. But yeah, we are going to talk about it. I've got quite a few things that I would like to say, but just from, I guess, like the Hollywood perspective and how it did, it was an Academy Award winner. It won Best Adapted Screenplay, and then Benedict Cumberbatch was nominated for Best Actor for the Academy Award. And very troubling, but it was produced by the Weinstein Company. It did come out in 2014, so that kind of checks out, unfortunately. And maybe another reason why I don't really like it that much. But so let's just start like kind of from the top, like what overall, in general, what are your thoughts about the movie?
So
what would you give it out of a 10?
God, like a 3? Like a 3 or a 4?
That low?
Yeah, it really bothers me in quite
a
lot of ways.
You gotta justify your rating. So 3 okay. out of 10 from the leftist Squidward.
Should I be saying a 3 out of 10? Let's just say it's like a...
Now you're like regretting it, like, well, maybe it deserves more.
Let's just say, let's stick with 3. It'll be like a 3.5 out of 10 more likely. So I've seen the movie 3 times. The first time I saw it was when it came out. I was 19 years old. And I had thought about politics here and there, but I wasn't fully radicalized. And I hadn't properly explored my own queer identity. I think I saw it with the lens of, at the time, I wasn't seeing a lot of very mainstream films that were openly, let's say, like sympathetic to queer people. I remember, there's a lot of movies that have come out in the 10s, from the early 10s up to the late, where they might not have aged amazingly, but because they had positive sort of treatments of queer identities, they were beloved by everybody. Like I think of The Danish Girl, for example, where Eddie Redmayne is like should not have been playing a trans woman, and yet people loved it because it was like the first of its kind in terms of a big mainstream film. So I thought very little of it in terms of whether it bothered me or not. I just saw it and I was like, oh, fair enough, okay, cool. saw it again when I was about 3 years ago, and it had a very like visceral reaction where I was like, oh, there's a lot here that I just am not gelling with.
Right.
It's a very, it's a British film, but it does match that very serious Hollywood drama style of filmmaking. It, you know, chooses to completely butcher the accuracy of Turing's life for the sake of making the entire movie basically this one queer romance about a man and his like dead crush from like when he was a really young boy. And I felt as if the overall message, despite the fact that it was relatively pro-gay, did also feel a bit like self-congratulatory at times from the sort of British status quo perspective. And then finally, the two like other things that I had trouble gelling with were, one, I really think that the portrayal of Turing as a neurodivergent figure was very, very, very bad. And also generally, I don't care too much for these like British like Blitz World War II films, because I feel like they have been made over and over and over and over again. And it really feels like, despite the fact that, yes, the British fighting the Nazis was like objectively a good thing because the Nazis had to be stopped, it feels like there's this one kind of unquestionably good thing that the British had to do related to war and that they struggled through. And so that era gets, you know, propagandized and made and turned into movies more so than any other era, because any other era would kind of show the British maybe doing unsavory things like imperialism or colonialism. And there's an element of that that I always feel uneasy about, because it never wants to question anything bad that they might have done in World War II, or any wrong decisions that might have led to innocent lives being lost. So there's a lot of things kind of happening when I watch movies like this, and bad neurodivergent representation and queer representation that I don't think is 100% amazingly done also like feels like the icing on the cake. So yeah, I think that's kind of my reasoning for the low score.
3.5.
Yes.
That's that.
Well, what did you give it?
You didn't give it a zero, though. So where did it earn these 3.5 points from?
Okay. We'll do my whole like argumentation, because I want to know your score as well. But it's a professionally produced film, and you can I'm trying to be like as like sort of unbiased as possible when I rate these films, even though that's like impossible, obviously.
But, yeah, of course.
You know, it's produced obviously very, very well. It has top line actors like Charles Dance and Benedict Cumberbatch and Keira Knightley and whatever else. They all do their lines very, very well. You know, and despite my protests, there are a couple scenes here and there that are written well enough that you're not, you know, constantly thinking about switching the movie off. It's a very well-made film, despite the fact that I don't really think the writing is amazing, and I and the actual sort of portrayals of the characters aren't great, and it's hard to take away from that. A zero to me would be like a movie that's not even trying to be a movie, you know. That's kind of where I stand with that.
Okay. Yeah, there were some elements about the movie that I did like, but I guess they're just like movie elements, you know. Like I really, really love the score, and that composer, actually they've done several other scores that I also like. I'm kind of like a score nerd. When I watch a movie, the first thing that I'm gonna notice is probably the score. So I did like that, and then there were some cinematography things that I liked. I liked all the shots of like the machine, the way that it like, you know, would cut to the machine, and then like I did appreciate some of the storytelling. It was kind of slow though, like in the beginning. Like I feel like it took a long time to progress to where it was gonna get, and then it was like, oh yep, he's gay and he's gonna be persecuted for it. Overall, I don't know. It's not a great movie, to be completely honest. I feel like it is okay, but like you said, some of those things that are incredibly problematic. And I don't know that I would even call it queer representation, because I think that that's like almost giving it a little bit too much, you know? Because where was the queerness? Like, the number one move, or the number one rule in films is to show, not tell. And this movie did the complete opposite. Like, it just told us about his relationships instead of showing us one. I think maybe I would give it like a 5, because I do really like the score and I do like some of the cinematography. Benedict Cumberbatch is a decent actor. I love Doctor Strange. And Keira Knightley did okay. You know, I feel like that was like one of those roles that like is very forgettable that she's been in. So yeah, I would give it a 5 overall.
That is fair. I definitely want to talk about Keira Knightley and Joan Clark's place in the movie, because there's an interesting sort of faux feminism done there, where they're like, you know, doing like, ladies can do it too, and then they never investigate that at all after like they present it. So there's definitely a lot to talk about even in her place, where she doesn't even add that much to the film, but that kind of speaks to how little or how like dirty they do Joan Clark as a historical figure.
Yeah, and I think that honestly, I feel like I kind of have like a hate-love relationship with biopics in general, because frequently you find that this kind of thing happens. That like, you know, when you're watching a biopic, for some people, you know, some people only get their history from Hollywood. So like that becomes their understanding of an event or a person, or, you know, I think that we all understand that it's just a movie, but when you fabricate parts of a real human's life just for the movie, you know, to make it into its Hollywood bullshit, that can be really dangerous, because like that is what people think of when they think of autistic people. Or, you know, like I've posted about Alan Turing before on Closeted Histories, like Instagram and over on TikTok. And people are like, what do you mean? Like, nobody talks about it. He got a movie. And it's like, yes, but like, did you watch the movie? Because that's not really him or his life. And so I think that becomes kind of like a point of frustration, especially when, you know, we're having conversations like this, when you're comparing. This is, of course, it's just for fun and analysis. And, you know, we're both nerds, and whoever's listening to this is also a nerd, because they like to listen to analysis. But, you know, that I do think that there is some truth to it being dangerous about like just kind of making these assumptions and changing the story to make it into a more palatable and digestible portrayal of someone's life. Because unfortunately, that's not what he was like, and that's not what Joan Clark was like. And so do you want to talk more about Joan?
Yeah, I mean, mostly I think there's a really interesting trope that they use with Joan, where, or at least there's a couple of interesting changes that they make to Joan's character specifically that have nothing to do with real life. One of those being that the crossword puzzle to show that Joan was a genius never really happens. The truth is much more mundane. She was already working at Bletchley Park and actually had met Turing apparently in Cambridge before Bletchley Park even happened, and managed to just get promoted to Hut 8, where a lot of the, you know, sexy cryptography stuff was actually happening. Mm-hmm. So there was that. And then the other element of it was, you know, in this really annoying attempt to make Turing seem a lot more valiant and heroic, Clark never really married or never agreed to marry Turing for the reasons that the movie shows, which is that Turing was trying to save Clark from being sent back to her strict parents that wanted her to marry off. and become a housewife. The reason they got married was just that they got along, that they became incredibly close. And despite the fact that Turing didn't sort of disclose his queerness to Clark until after they got engaged, they were just an incredibly close couple that Turing made an effort to be close to. So there's elements of it where Clark's character is reduced to tropes that allow Turing's character to look much more valiant or heroic. But mm-hmm. I also think that the movie was going for such a weird attempt at this base, like autistic genius character for Turing, that in turn to depict something much messier, like the relationship that Turing had with Clark in real life, would have been much more complicated and would have needed them to explain that actually he was very good at picking up certain cues and doing things that the movie is trying to actually diminish him as being capable of doing. So Clark is very much reduced to being very helpful plot movers for Turing's character, which was very unfair. And again, I said it at the beginning of this podcast, but because we have this opening scene with the crossword puzzle where Clark is depicted as some kind of genius who's actually even better at crosswords than Turing. Mm-hmm. And then what does she actually do in the rest of the movie? Not much. They don't really show her achieving anything else. The only person that ever gets anything done in the fucking movie is Turing, which again downplays all of the efforts of his colleagues who are also working hard and Clark, because they have to keep having this divide between the neurodivergent genius and the neurotypical idiots that are like bringing him or slowing him down.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, what did you think? Very
like savant-like.
For sure.
Yeah. Going back to Joan, I think that it is incredibly disappointing that she is portrayed in a way where that she couldn't like stand on her own value, that she had to be discovered by Turing, and that like, dude, that's not what happened. She already worked there. So, like, you know, trying to take this kind of, I guess, neoliberal feminist approach of like, oh, girl boss power, you know, whatever, that like, you're not even really doing that either. So, you know, the overall messaging of the movie, I think, is really confusing, because like, they're reducing the characters to so little when they have so much to work off of in real life. Like, these were real people, you know, that they had real struggles and real relationships. And, you know, Joan and Alan, I think based on like what I read, that they broke up after he disclosed to her, but that like, you know, she didn't know. It's not like it was in the movie of like, oh yeah, I knew that you were gay. Like, it's fine. Let's do this to kind of protect both of us, because that wasn't the reality. The reality was that Joan and Alan were very close. They worked together and they had a friendship, and that turned into an engagement. And after he disclosed to her, she was upset, you know, because she didn't know. And I think that that would have been a much more powerful story to tell than this like fabricated bullshit of like, you know, oh, I don't want to be a housewife. Like, that wasn't her path to begin with. And I think that it really like, and maybe this is just me like kind of feeling too much of it, but that there are many times where queer people did have to get married, where they had to be married in a heteronormative appearing relationship. And that I think that that kind of just like also takes away from that, because like people had to do that to survive. And that like, you're doing this as like a plot device that didn't really happen. And so I just, it's disrespectful, you know, I just feel like the people that you're trying to pander to by telling this story, you're ultimately disrespecting, because like, you don't know the real history. That's one thing that has been really, really affirming in my journey of closeted history, is that the more history I learn, the more affirmed that I feel in my identity, that like, there were people just like me who existed all throughout history, from ancient history up until modern times, that like, the point is that there are people who have lived and loved just like me. and that Hollywood isn't telling these stories. And so that has been the really great thing about being able to tell these stories on the podcast, because, you know, I just feel like Alan Turing and all of our other fellow gays just deserve so much better to have their real stories being told. And it's really sad to see Hollywood kind of take it for their own agenda, because this movie is obviously Oscar bait. Very obviously Oscar bait. And I think that kind of goes in with the neurodivergent portrayal, that's part of kind of what they're doing there as well. What were your thoughts about that?
God, the neurodivergent stuff, I think, is the most rage-inducing stuff in the movie, for sure. There's a split where the movie can't decide if they think being neurodivergent is always missing social cues or is being a dick to absolutely everybody. Like, there's moments where Alan is just outright being hostile to people, and they're like, that's what autistic people do. And it's so bizarre to watch and to think that people who are writing this movie were like, yes, this is absolutely great representation for Alan Turing and who he was. There's also like such condescending writing around the neurodivergent stuff. There's bits where Alan, you know, gets an idea from Matthew Good's character, whose name I forget, but he says like, oh, this isn't an entirely terrible idea. And Keira Knightley's like, I think that's Alan for thank you. Or like, you know, someone says something a lot more straightforward than what Alan says. And then they go, that's what a normal person would have said, by the way, Alan. And it's like, my God, like, do you understand what you're trying to represent in this movie? Or are you straight up like trying to caricaturize it? Because it doesn't feel like there's any kind of charitable interpretation here that Alan might have actually been neurodivergent. It just feels like done in such a dismissive way.
Yeah, I did read like whether he was autistic or not. And of course, at this point, because he's dead and we won't ever know, that whatever we say can only be speculation, which is fine. But that people said that, like, you know, he got along perfectly well and didn't miss the social cues, like how it was portrayed in the movie. I mean, and we said this before, but I feel like it was just like Sherlock, but Alan Turing. And I think that it continues to solidify this really prevalent portrayal that we already see of just white autistic men in media. Take like The Good Doctor, Sherlock, now this movie, if you want to call this that kind of representation, which I would caution you not to, but you know, I just think that media portrayals with autistic people just continue to like reinforce ideas that we already have about autistic people. And, you know, I'm a self-determined autistic person. And when I watched the movie, like the interview scene, it was funny. And I was like, okay, maybe he's neurodivergent. This is cool. And like, I felt kind of excited to have that kind of representation, but then the rest of the film definitely isn't that. And that, like, you know, I don't think that autistic people are really missing social cues in that way. Like, we also mask, and that's important to talk about. But I don't know. I just feel like they were just kind of going for like the tortured genius kind of portrayal or trope for Alan, and it's unfortunate because that's not what he was really like.
There's actually like, so there's a couple of film inaccuracies that I want to talk about, because they really I don't mind too much that biopics like change certain things in films, because they need to make movie magic work, and they have a certain pacing to fit to, and obviously executive producers and producers also mess with the movie. But
right,
there are very convenient film inaccuracies that add to the bad representation of, you know, Turing as a hypothetically neurodivergent person, because, you know, like you said, we'll never really know, or right. Or Turing as a queer person. For example, one of the big ones is that Turing in the movie, no one's listening to him, not the military officer that's in charge of the operation, not the MI6 officer that's in charge of the military officer. So he takes matters into his own hands and writes to Winston Churchill and says, no one's listening to me. This is what I need to win the war. And suddenly they're like, all right, Alan Turing is actually now in charge of the entire operation, and he can fire whoever he wants, whenever he wants. And the truth is that him and his colleagues were deeply frustrated because no one was listening to them, like as a collective. It wasn't him. It was him and all his colleagues together were frustrated at the fact that they weren't getting enough staffing or resources for the machinery they needed to make to intercept Nazi messages. So they essentially write to Churchill together with Turing's name being at the top of the letter. And the cryptographers never heard back from the prime minister, but the prime minister did action essentially more resources coming to them. So they said they never heard back, but from that day, their lives were made like infinitely easier. And part of why that inaccuracy is so convenient for the movie to do is because it adds to this persona of Turing being cold and callous and unfeeling as a neurodivergent person. As soon as he gets the fake response from Churchill that he's put in charge, he immediately fires two people right off the bat. And like it shows that he has like no emotion towards them and no feelings about the fact that he's just like ruined their careers or whatever. Which again is like kind of what we're talking about this movie, sensationalizing this autistic genius trope. And one other thing I wanted to say is that there's something so dangerous about the kind of neurodivergent genius that I feel Cumberbatch has played throughout his career. Because to me, it reads as if neurotypical people are writing them going, oh yeah, we have to value and love autistic people because they're useful to society. And that's why they're good. Not because they're their own human beings who deserve respect and rights, but because they're geniuses that one day might actually give us something useful or something productive.
Right. And I think that, yeah, that is part of why like this portrayal of an autistic person is just it's terrible. Like I wouldn't call it representation because, yeah, I mean, you know, it completely ignores the work of his colleagues. And while, yes, okay, it's supposed to be about Turing and, you know, this movie does has to be sensationalized for Hollywood, whatever. But that I think that it does send a different message about neurodivergent people and their capacity for relationships, and that's how we continue the stigma, or, you know, we make assumptions or we are prejudiced towards people because of certain ideas that are prevalent in our society. And that's it right there. And not only, you know, is it dangerous because of the portrayal of the neurodivergent person, but like that it ignores the interconnectedness of everyone has something different to do, has a different contribution, that like, you know, Alan wouldn't have been as successful without Joan, without Matthew Good's character, without, you know, I feel like everyone kind of plays a part in it, and that like, yes, you know, I guess he's the tortured genius, but that like he wasn't the only one doing work, and it just seemed like that wasn't Turing at all. Like I did a very brief episode on him just talking about LGBTQ+ people in STEM. And so I mentioned him in the podcast, and that like he seemed like he was very friendly and like he had good relationships with his colleagues, and that the work that he was doing with his team was very important. And so like not only does this destroy like any positive portrayal of an autistic person, but like it doesn't portray him very well either. So that's one of several misrepresentations and historical inaccuracies that like we mentioned before, that Joan was not discovered by Turing. She worked there on her own. Imagine that, she had her own accomplishments. And then I guess like a really big historical inaccuracy was the whole like chemical castration thing. Like I mentioned before, it was really disappointing that like they took all of this time to kind of lead up to, okay, we got to break the Enigma and we're building this machine. But then simultaneously, they have this like fake detective telling this like bullshit story when like, they could have just actually told the story because there was a trial and everything. Like, you know, he was prosecuted through the full extent of the law. Like, you know, it wasn't just like, oh, yeah, they found out that I was gay. And so now I have to take this stuff. Like, you know, he was put on trial and it was very public. And then ultimately he did have the decision whether he could endure chemical castration or he could be sent to prison. And in the end, like, it kind of shows him like tremoring a little bit and that like it impacted his work, but that I read that none of that was really true, that like he just like he wasn't impacted physically in that way by the medication, that it didn't like cause any tremors or anything like that. And then it did mention at the end of the movie that he unalived himself, and that there have been like some, I guess, speculations about whether that's really true or not. And like I think I read one time that like his mom looked into it because she thought that he was poisoned, because apparently there was like arsenic on the apple that he ate. And like whether he administered that or that was done by another person. I mean, I think that it's perfectly reasonable to speculate whether someone would want to harm him given his government clearance, given the information that he knew, given his sexuality, especially at that time. But also, it would make sense why he would also be mentally struggling given the circumstances as well. So, you know, it's interesting to look back now with the information that we have. But, you know, all that we can do is just kind of speculate. What are your thoughts?
I think that so the fake cop thing is one of two really big inaccuracies that I want to touch on, and I'm glad that you brought it up.
Yeah.
I definitely agree that they could have just told the story straight, and it would have been a much better way of actually showing how unbelievably unjust and unfair and cruel the system was to Turing. Mm-hmm. The intention from the director, from what I read, was that they wanted the cop that found Turing to be gay to be like a good guy who actually just thought Turing might have been a spy. And there was this whole misunderstanding that Turing was actually just gay, and the cop didn't want him to be prosecuted for being gay, but ultimately he didn't have a choice because his investigation led to that discovery or whatever. And first of all, Turing was never investigated for being a Soviet spy. In fact, mm-hmm. the thing with John Carencross, which was in the movie, there's a Soviet spy who has infiltrated the hut where the cryptographers are working. And there's this whole drama where Turing wants to oust him, but if he does, then the spy is going to oust Turing for being gay. Mm-hmm. And none of that ever happened. As far as I know and from what I read, John Carencross never actually met Turing. So one of those like Hollywood things where they just wanted to spice up the movie and add some drama. So that was one thing. And then the second thing is that to take away...
Can we go back to what you mentioned? Because I just, you know, like we mentioned earlier, that this like audience that I guess you're supposed to be like, I don't know any other word than pandering to, because like you're not really telling it historically very well, that, you know, supposedly he met this Russian spy. Like, first of all, they accused him of being a spy, which, like, dude, he, like, saved us and helped in the war. Like, that is just defamation, you know? Like, those are very slanderous words. So I feel like even portraying that in the movie, like, you really want to go that direction. And then the whole blackmail thing, I think that, like, kind of going back to what I was saying about, like, queer marriages and how many people kind of set up arranged marriages for themselves to protect themselves, that, like, this was definitely a real thing that happened in the 50s, was that, I mean, people were blackmailed for their sexuality all the time. And I'm sure in places where it's not accepted, that's still happening, that, you know, unfortunately, people take that information and they use it against queer folks, and that, like, that's not something to sensationalize in a movie, that this is a real problem and a real thing that real human beings experience. And so I feel like it just diminishes that a little bit as well. So I just wanted to add that.
No, that's totally fair. And I agree with everything you said. What I would say, just in addition to my previous point, is the fake cop inaccuracy is kind of one of the main reasons why I feel like the film feels very self-congratulatory about the way that it's depicting queer people. Because what happens in the film is that a man who actually doesn't seem to be a homophobe but just wants to stamp out a Soviet spy accidentally finds out Turing is gay, and then that leads to the trial and the situation with Turing and his sentencing. What actually happens is that Turing reports that someone who was affiliated with a sexual partner of his had burgled his house, and during the police investigation, Turing has to disclose that he is having a sexual relationship with another man, and the police then just charge him. And that's where his sentencing begins. So if the actual story would have been told, you would have had a much more real account of how brutal and unfair the police system was. Whereas in this version of the story, it seems as if, like, you know, the law just happens against everybody's will. And actually, the police were, like, good guys that didn't want to, didn't want to charge Turing. Like, the guy who catches him, who also played by Rory Kinnear, who is a great actor, and kind of sucks that he had to play this one character. But he catches Turing. They find out that it's because he's gay, that's why he's, like, kind of doing shifty things. And he goes, like, I didn't want that to happen. I was just trying to stamp out a spy. That sucks. Like, it's such a fake, fantastical idea that Britain was so much more progressive. And it's just its laws, unfortunately, that no one knows where they came from. But the people that lived under them were actually so peaceful and tolerant. Like, it makes no sense, you know? Definitely something that pissed me off.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, and because it very blatantly and purposefully ignores the continued state-issued violence against queer folks by the carceral system and the justice system, that, like, yeah, they are shitty laws, but because, like, y'all keep enforcing them. And, like, you know, I think sodomy laws were a thing in the UK, and you can correct me, I think until, like, 1967 is when it was finally, like, some of the sodomy laws were finally overturned. And so it's like, yeah, these are your laws that you're responsible for. So I think that happens a lot in movies that I guess are very politically motivated or have some sort of, like, marginalized community being portrayed, that there is a tendency to typically ignore the systematic and systemic issues that exist for said marginalized community, and that it's always taken back to an individual level, that, like, you know, oh, that cop wasn't homophobic, he didn't want this to happen. Like, first of all, the likelihood that that's true is pretty slim, because, you know, he's a cop in 1950s, 1940s time era. So, you know, it feels very unlikely. And even if that particular person didn't feel that way, speaking out in a group would probably not be common. That, like, you know, the way that his mates were talking was probably how other queer people were being referred to. And we're seeing this clash with the police state, and that, like, they're not going to let that be present in this movie. I think that that happens in a lot of movies where there are marginalized communities being portrayed, because it's just ignoring things and putting it back onto an individual level so that you can say, oh, I'm a good person, I'm not going to do that. So this seems pretty unlikely. But the truth is that there are systems in place that allow for these things to happen every day. And it's so frustrating because, you know, like, people want to know the truth. They want to know what really happened. They want to know who these people really are. And that when we continue to sensationalize things through Hollywood, that it just kind of adds to that misinformation. And I think that, because, you know, you and I were talking about class consciousness, and that, like, it's very important to both of us. But I think that that is kind of like a way to keep us away from that consciousness, because then it's just put back onto the individual rather than examining these systems that perpetuate oppression.
Yeah, that's such a good point. You really, like, sort of hit the what's it called? The bull on the head. I can't remember the exact term, but, like,
the nail on the head.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
you really that's such a good point. You really hit the nail on the head, because, like, the story sort of absolves the cop, or absolves the police as, like, an acting force that's doing something actually quite brutal to Alan, and instead tries to sort of anonymize and point a finger at this, like, weird thing that no one knows where it came from, but it's actually just, again, the police enforcing said law.
I feel like you mentioned that actor, that he was also in Black Mirror. If you've ever seen Black Mirror,
you know
not to watch the first episode. And he's in the first episode.
It's not a bad first episode.
He fucks a pig on public
spoilers.
yeah, exactly. Spoilers. But, like, I just feel like I just can't unsee him from that role. So, yeah, I love Black Mirror. And the kid who plays little Alan Turing is also on that show.
In Shut Up and Dance. Yeah, yeah.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, season one of that show is it's a very good show, though.
The first few seasons before it becomes, like, more of a Netflix show feel, like, a lot darker and cynical and sad and pessimistic, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, I think the only, like, I haven't watched the most recent season, but my favorite episode is the San Junipero one, because it has a happy queer episode. Ending. Yeah. I love it. And I also like the episode where, like, the wife cheats on him. And
yes.
Yeah.
I think is that called The Entire History of You?
Yes.
That's a great episode. Yeah, sorry.
Were there any other, like, historical inaccuracy? Oh, there was actually a historical accuracy that I wanted to note, like a little honorable mention, that several times in the film he's shown running, and that the real Alan Turing was actually a runner. He was a long distance runner and often would use that as, like, a way to kind of cope. And I thought that was really cool that they included that, even though they didn't, like, you know, say anything. But for nerds like me and you who look it up after.
Well, the shots of him running were actually candid shots of Benedict Cumberbatch trying to escape the film set, but they kept catching him and forcing him to make the film. They were like, nope, you're not getting away from this one.
Yeah. But, another movie that makes me look like a tortured genius. Oh, fine.
Yeah. I did appreciate that, and it was interesting to see them put that in and kind of use this. There was something kind of nice about them using that as, like, a psychological thing, where it's like, that was him both kind of running from his problems but also trying to exorcise the demons of like the stresses he was having about the war and his identity and hiding it and all that stuff. That was really interesting. The main inaccuracy that I kind of have been itching to talk about, but I haven't found like the right moment to talk about, that to me is it, if you, once you start like digging into how inaccurate it is, you start to like, understand and unravel the entire framing of the movie is, Christopher Morcom, the first ever love that Alan Turing had, and all the sort of things that went wrong there. And it starts to tell you that the movie was trying to portray Alan's life in such a wildly different way from how Alan actually lived, that it informs, like, you know, his neurodivergence. It informs his queerness. Christopher was not as interested in Alan as the movie shows him to be. In school, which is where they met until Christopher unfortunately died of tuberculosis. In school, what actually happened was that Christopher was quite passive towards Alan. And they didn't actually trade secrets about cryptography and codes to each other. They mostly just talked about maths and chemistry. The thing where Alan builds the first big Nazi code cracking machine and calls it Christopher is a complete fabrication. And why that to me is maybe the most significant lie told in the film is that it completely warps the idea of why it is that we should be sentimentally sympathetic towards gay people at all, as per the film's messaging. Alan calls the machine Christopher and then goes on to essentially like stick with Christopher. And even after the war, he's now transported Christopher back to his house. And the way he's depicted after the war is that he's not really doing anything other than just obsessing over Christopher. Alan wasn't like that. After the war, not only was he still working as a consultant for different sort of government communications programs, but he also was doing work in mathematical biology, and released actually one of his most famous works was entirely based in mathematical biology and patterns. So there is this kind of lie told that the reason we should feel sad and sentimental towards Alan is that actually he wasn't so much just like queer. He was also queer and had always been like fatally in love with this one person his entire life. When the truth is that Alan Turing was not like that, did not name the machine after Christopher. And upon the sentencing that Alan had to suffer from the government, he was barred from entering America, but was able to travel across Europe after being ousted as a gay man. And he met another man in Norway that he developed a bit of a relationship with, but they were never able to meet up again because the government intervened on their like letters and postcards to each other to the point where they weren't able to see each other because they were able to intercept messages that were meant to go to each other about where they should be meeting up. So Alan's life continued after Christopher, but the movie instead shows us this gay man who actually only had his eyes for one person. And there's something really disingenuous about a movie that has no idea how queer people are or how they behave, showing us that actually queer people are serially monogamous and just love one person their entire life. And it's not like they can just like, you know, have multiple relationships and be complex human beings. They have to be these like larger than life characters who actually are so romantic. We should feel sorry for them. And I feel like that, there's this weird sensationalization of Turing's love life in that sense that really frames the movie as trying to make more of his queerness than was actually there with regards to Christopher, if that makes sense.
Like, they didn't really show his queerness at all.
Yeah.
And it sounds like from what you're saying that like the government continued to harass him and persecute him, because if they're intercepting his letters with someone that he potentially has a relationship with, that like it sounds like they're not letting that go, even though you've already like, you know, done your sentencing, because like he had already been on the medication. It's strange because I feel like the whole movie we're like kind of cheering against him because he's like kind of an asshole, but then like the movie's also telling me that like I should feel bad for him, and that's where his worth comes from, is me feeling bad for him because, oh, he's this great person in society and look at the wonderful things that he accomplished, and you know, he helped end the war, but that like that's where his value comes from, and not just like inherently being valuable because you're a human being. You know, so the messaging overall in the film I think is really strange, and it doesn't do anybody any justice, Alan, Joan, you know, anything. And I think that you mentioned it at the beginning of the show, but talking about how like there's just so much media that is really centered around World War II that like I legitimately don't understand how we have so much media about World War II, but like hardly any of it is very accurate. I just feel like Hollywood needs to do better. And yeah, I would say overall it's a disappointing movie. I think that it could have been so much more than what it was, and that they had so many opportunities to do something better, but they definitely made some choices, and they wanted to make it very digestible, very like, you know, it kind of reminds me of like, I don't know if you've ever seen that meme that's like, oh, can we have human rights? Republicans, no. Democrats, no. Hashtag BLM and a pride flag. Like, that's very much the vibe of the movie. So, you know, I guess queer people are only worthy if they can produce things, or continue the status quo.
Yeah, I mean, the I think there's a bit of a shift, at least in how movies are portraying queer people now, where we are getting a slightly more truthful version of queer people getting to be humans and complex. And, you know, we don't have to sit with these movies that are like The Imitation Game, where it's like we should only value Alan because he was useful to us in the war, he was some kind of genius, and he was also deeply tied to this one person, clearly monogamous and also like deeply romantic. Like, none of these are like necessarily super true about Alan and or about
queer people in general,
or about queer people as a whole. Yeah. And I think the thing that really pissed me off about the Christopher inaccuracies is that I feel like the serial monogamy thing is trying to almost like be like, see, gay people can also be tied to one person their whole lives, just like us, you know, like it's trying to bring queer people closer to this idea of what is heteronormative and acceptable. But thankfully, you know, movies exist now. Like, I'm always going to quote Emma Seligman because she is like my hero. But Shiva Baby and Bottoms, where it's like queer people can be dumb and messy and like problematic, and like, you know, and that can be like fun to watch, and that can be entertaining as well. But I agree, this movie definitely sits in a really awkward and uncomfortable era where representation was done so badly. But at the time, people didn't know any better, or at least the elites that gave out awards didn't know any better, to the point where, you know, anytime anything was done in a very shoddy way like this, or The Danish Girl, or The Green Book, it would just make it in the Oscars, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a shame. I'm glad that we are slowly moving away from this era of filmmaking. But as you pointed out in, like, The Good Doctor, I think it's called, the one with Freddie Highmore in it, like, we're clearly not out of the woods yet with, like, really bad portrayals of people that are marginalized day in and day out.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that, like, I'm really not recalling any actors of color from this movie.
God, that is a phenomenal point. I can't think of a single pocket. Like, I mean, if there were, they weren't given in a significant enough part that like there is anything memorable about them, which fucking sucks. you know?
Well, and that's kind of going back to my point that I was making earlier, that like, how do we have so much World War II propaganda and media, and none of it is accurate? Like, I don't know if, have you ever seen A League of Their Own, the TV show?
No, but I've heard many things.
It's so good. It's so good. But like, while I do agree with you that media is changing, I think that we're facing a new problem now, that like, while we do get some really great portrayals in media, unfortunately, they get canceled. Like A League of Their Own, the first season was phenomenal, and it was very intersectional. It touched on gender issues and not just like queer issues. And yeah, season two got canceled. So it's frustrating. But I think that that kind of like that era of movies, like the 2010s, I feel like movies just from that time, like, were either trying to be art, trying to win some kind of award, or like very much have like girl boss energy. Like very neoliberal kind of messaging, that, oh, don't worry about the system. The system is fine. See, there are still good people. And fortunately, 10 years later, here we are. I think that a lot of people are moving past that, that we're ready for narratives that do show real, honest portrayals of people, that are messy and just like life, you know? So yeah, The Imitation Game, definitely not my favorite, definitely not good representation. I asked some folks over on my Instagram in our little broadcast channel to submit some of their thoughts. So I'm just going to use this time to share some of the community thoughts on The Imitation Game. A lot of people said that they were not impressed with the representation, that they would not have called it representation. People said that Alan Turing were like their favorite mathematician. One person said, it's not a movie about being queer. That's a whole other thing of him. And like, yeah, I'm inclined to agree. And then another person said Turing's queerness was an afterthought when the movie was made. And I feel like that definitely rings true to a lot of the things that we were saying as well, that like, I don't know if like they just didn't think about how they were going to portray that, or like really why they went that direction. I think the whole like made up detective cop thing just ruins the story. And then someone else said, I feel like they tried to make Turing a Sherlock like genius character. And that's, yeah, that's what I was thinking as well. And another person said, yes, it's one of my comfort movies for some reason, and also makes me sob. So I will say that I could see why it would be a comfort movie, definitely, because I do like the cinematography. I like some of the like framing and just the way that they film it. But that and the score are about it as far as positive things that I have to say about it. So did you have any other like final notes that you wanted to say, or anything that you feel like we kind of missed?
In terms of closing thoughts, I agree with what was said. I stick to my 3.5 rating. I think that, you know, overall, we've talked so much about how the movie was, I will say this, I kind of disagree slightly with the comment about that someone made from the live feed about Turing's queerness being a bit of an afterthought. I think that, if anything, it feels like they were carefully trying to figure out ways to, you know, kind of disingenuously warp his queerness away from what it actually was into being a neatly packaged, chewable queerness for straights to watch at home. So it's an afterthought with regards to like what his queerness was in the context of a brutally homophobic society and government, but within the production of the movie itself and the way they were constructing it, I really feel like they were like, okay, we want to win cheap points by making a movie about a queer person, but also we don't want to, you know, we want to be careful about giving that queer person too much of the benefit of the doubt. Actually, we want to try and make that queer person as close to a monogamous, loyal, straight person as humanly possible, to the point where, again, we don't hear about his other relationships. We don't, you know, we don't hear about him trying to explore other relationships following the sentencing. You know, we never actually see any sexual acts happen. It's all way too convenient for a society that wants to feel like they're allies, but they're still very much not.
Yeah, and I completely agree. I feel like, yeah, they definitely try to make it more palatable, and kind of to go back what I was saying about race, that like there are no people of color in the movie, and that what is palatable in our society, and not that I'm saying that this is okay, because obviously it's not, but what is palatable in our society is white gay men. And that, like, that is often what gets portrayed, because it is very intentional to make it more palatable in that way, which is unfortunate, because, I mean, I'm sure that there were plenty of Black, Indigenous, and people of color doing wonderful things during World War II, despite, you know, systemic barriers and a society that was not very accepting, you know. I want to hear more of those stories.
No, I agree. And the point you made about how a lot of these stories, or a lot of the earlier stories that still don't feel like they've aged well, really their starting point is often almost always cis white gay men, is such a poignant and like true point to the fact that there was so little intersectionality for so long, even as early as, you know, the late 10s, where you feel like they're trying to make a movie that might be good queer representation or whatever. And yet a lot of these movies are like, well, you know, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's just do like the most sort of popular or like, you know, well-known kind of queerness, and then just kind of stop there. Let's not go any further. And you can feel that in a lot of movies for a very long time. Like it took a while before, I still feel like obviously there's so much stuff that's like underrepresented. But that's where the self-congratulatory thing comes for me, because every time I watch these movies, they're doing the bare minimum. They do it in a disingenuous way, and they win so many fucking awards for it.
Right. Right. And like, you can take that award and shove it up your ass, because this is not, I mean, it's just, it's sad, because I feel like queer people get so little representation in the media, and then like the very little representation that we do get, there is just so much whitewashing, de-radicalizing, that, you know, it's not an accurate story either. And then sadly, a lot of times Hollywood would kind of employ some of these very stereotypical tropes, and call that representation rather than telling the real story. So hopefully we'll see that improving. I think that definitely there have been some revolutionary moments that we're living through in our lifetime, which we're very privileged to see. And I think that there is definitely a social consciousness that is happening, and that people are just not really accepting that anymore. And like definitely in the 2010s, that was kind of like, okay, we'll take our little bit of representation and just be happy with it. But now that people are like, well, this is shit, so send it back.
Can I, there was actually one closing point that I wanted to make with regards to the context of the movie happening in the UK, if that's all right.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Of course. I'd love to hear that.
So, you know, first of all, when you pointed out that it was 1967 where it was finally decriminalized, the mm-hmm. act of sodomy in private, you were bang on the money. Like that's exactly when it happened. Weirdly, UK laws were so focused on the act of sodomy and acts of like what was called buggery at the time between men that women were completely overlooked. almost to their advantage, because a lot of like queer relationships with women were sort of allowed to happen in secret, because they weren't as persecuted as men were. Like, there were openly criminalized statements made against them. In 1921, they were thinking of extending it to same-sex relationships between women as well. The only reason they didn't pass it is because when they were looking into it, they decided that the overwhelming majority of women had no idea what it even was, the act of same-sex relationships. So the confusion there meant that they kind of just ignored it.
Good play, ladies. Good play.
Yes, absolutely. A win for women everywhere.
A win is a win.
Yeah, yeah.
A win is a win.
In 1988, there was Section 28, obviously, which was this horrifying thing where nothing promoting sexuality could be put out into the public. And this was happening at a time where AIDS was roaring across the UK. So any kind of help in sexual health that could have been given to queer people was diminished and led to many more deaths that needed to happen. The petition to get Alan Turing pardoned started in 2009, and it only happened around 2013, 2014. So it took ages for them to actually get, it took years for them to actually get anything to happen, because ministers and MPs kept slowing the process down, kept debating that it wasn't worth happening. And then when it was becoming a bill, they were trying to get in the way of it. When David Cameron makes gay marriage legal in 2013. This is kind of happening at a time where, you know, social understandings of gay people, particularly in the terms of cis gay people, were starting to become a lot more relaxed. And I think, I can't remember if like that came before or after Obama, but I remember that like from America's side, there was also like the legalization of stuff happening at the same time. And so once that happens, you then suddenly get an onslaught of like feel-good liberal films about queerness now that it's actually sort of much more relaxed. So you have The Danish Girl, which happened at this time as well. You had this movie. You also had some like much better movies with good queer representation, particularly Pride. Pride is one of the best British queer films ever made. But it feels like The Imitation Game very much was coming at a point where they were like well aware that there was something in the air about legalizing and normalizing tendencies towards accepting queer lifestyles. And they were like, this is a very easy win for us in terms of the award season. You know, like there was making the serious World War II film that is always going to fucking score points because it's World War II and British people love, you know, pretending that all of them were, you know, involved there and then. But yeah, with there was like World War II, and then they thought, well, if we can pair that with what's currently happening with gay marriage being legalized and society looking more favorably upon queer people, then like it was just it feels a lot more like an opportunistic movie when you understand it in that context, especially when you understand how disingenuous the movie actually is as well.
Yeah, honestly, for me, that takes like a good point off for me, because
you're joining team three.
Well, hey, no, I'm at like a four. I do really like the score, and that composer is excellent. Even though four I can't the say score. Their name, four yeah, for yeah. the score.
Okay,
but yeah, it's funny because like, I mean, this won an Academy Award, but in the same breath, like same-sex marriage is illegal in the U.S. until 2015. So while the U.K. took some steps a couple of years before, which does make it feel definitely more disingenuous, that like, how is this movie even coming out and winning an Academy Award when like people aren't even allowed to get married legally at this point in the U.S. And so it does very much have that like self-congratulatory kind of attitude of like patting ourselves on the back, like, oh, we made this movie. Good job, us.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. So you've convinced me. I'm at a 4 out of 10 for the movie.
Nice. We did it. We did it, gang.
You have successfully convinced me. Yeah, 4 out of 10 for me. I like the score. I like the cinematography, but that's pretty much it. We didn't even talk about Keira Knightley.
We kind of touched on Keira Knightley very briefly, but I mean, more than happy to hear if there's anything else you want to bring up.
I mean,
about
I guess
it,
my,
sure.
Like, it just, it was a movie that she existed in, you know, it just kind of feels like that vibe. Like there wasn't really anything noteworthy about her performance.
There was a lot of, Keira Knightley's character is presented as this like kind, understanding person who is able to look past the fact that Alan is so neurodivergent, he scares everyone else. She's nice and she's sympathetic and she is not going to be put off by the fact that his neurodivergent genius trait makes him really mean and horrible to other people. And then, like, the movie does a 180 where whenever they need conflict or tense dialogue between Keira Knightley and Benedict Cumberbatch, her character is super horrible about the fact that he's neurodivergent and, like, makes really awful comments that, like, in today's day and age would be, it would be, like, lying or disingenuous not to call it ableism, you know?
Right.
So it's really wild because, again, it's like a, it's a female character that, and I don't know who wrote the movie, but it's a female character that feels like it was written by men, where it's like she's being used just because she has no character. She's there to service the development and the motivations of the male characters.
Right.
So yeah, just, it sucks because Keira Knightley, I think, is a great actor. I like mm-hmm. Keira Knightley a lot, but Joan Clarke was done dirty in the movie, and Keira Knightley was done dirty by accepting the role, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, well, any other closing thoughts from you?
Just for people to watch Bottoms and Pride and Watermelon Woman and like a million other films that are way better.
Okay. Well, so what you're really saying is that you'll be back on the podcast for us to analyze this together.
Sounds good.
All right. Excellent. Well, do you want to tell the good folks where they can find you if they're interested in finding some of your content?
Yeah. If you're interested in leftist or Latin American content, you can find me at Leftist Squidward on TikTok. I am generally found there. My link tree is also available in my bio there, where you'll find my music, or my writing, or the Spotify playlist that I'm growing of loads of people's Latin American music recommendations.
It's really also good. You should check that out.
Thank you very much, Destiny. And the other thing that I wanted to say is that I do a lot of book talk stuff on TikTok, and I am running a book club at the moment, which is going to culminate in a stream date to be announced. But the stream is going to be happening on TikTok and on Twitch. You can find me on Twitch at Leftist Squidward. And this will double up as a fundraiser for Palestine. So the book that we're reading, which will lead up to that stream where we'll have a book discussion about the book, is The 100 Years War on Palestine by Rashid Khalidi, which is a phenomenal book. And if you are interested at all, follow me on my socials so that you can keep up with when I come out with a date. And, you know, donate as much as you can. It's for a good cause, obviously, with, you know, Free Palestine.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate your time, and I appreciate everyone sticking around till the end of the episode. If you aren't already, be sure to follow us on Instagram so you can get all the best updates. That's where we're most active in terms of social media. If you are looking for transcripts or other episodes, you can check out our website at closetedhistory.com. Thanks again to Thomas for joining me, and I'll see you in the next one.
Thanks so much.